Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Get a Job. I'm your host, Kathleen Brady, and I am a career life management coach with 25 years of experience helping people identify and achieve their goals. I am also the author of Get a Job, 10 Secrets to Career Success. I am happy to be here tonight to talk to you. As those of my listeners know, the purpose of our show is to help job seekers navigate some of the chaos and confusion that goes along with job hunting and some of the isolation as well. Doesn't matter what stage of the job search you are at. We come here, talk whether you're just starting your very first job or looking for a mid-career change, or you are, having a layoff. It doesn't matter. We're here to answer your questions, offer you some ideas, some best practices, some tips and suggestions, and to take your calls. So tonight we've got a very special guest. I'm very excited. And so if you've got questions, we're here to talk about technology. The phone number to call in, write this down. You can call in at any time, is 646-716-9397. Before we get started, I just wanted to give you a couple of announcements that I think is some exciting news for those of us here at Life Coach Radio Network. Our archives of past shows can now be found on iTunes, and you can just go to the iTunes store and search by Life Coach Radio Network, all one word, you'll find not only the archives of Get a Job, but also all of the other shows that appear on Life Coach Radio Network that are going to be helpful to you in any kind of career life planning. There's a whole host of things that you can download and listen during your commute. Now, as I mentioned, I'm also the author of Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success. And what we're trying to do with this show is follow the kind of format of that book, if you will, and give you a general overview of the job search process. So in our first show, we kind of just walked you through the whole process in very broad strokes to give you a sense of what you might want to, you know, how you need to think about it, how to frame your job search. Then in the second show, we talked a lot about market research. And there's so much you can do in terms of market research, and I know our guest is going to talk a little bit about that tonight as well. But the second show, we had a librarian on that told us about lots of resources, free resources that are available to you. We also talked about self-assessment and the importance of that. If you don't know what you're looking for or what it is you have to offer an employer, it's going to be hard for you to be successful. So we talked specifically about the Highlands Ability Battery. You might want to go back and listen to that one. And we also talked a little bit about resumes. We had the resume lady from Long Island on, Maureen Provost Ryan, last week, and she gave her some great tips to folks on how to format their resumes. But tonight's topic is of particular interest to me personally, and I know to a lot of people. We want to talk about the impact technology is having on people's job searches, specifically those dreaded online application systems. Lots of complaints I get about job hunting have to do with filling out online applications, and we're hoping to kind of clarify things and give you a little bit of guidance around that. So our guest tonight is Susan Vitale. Susan is the chief marketer. Hi, Susan. How are you? I'm so glad you're here. I was a little nervous.
I'm here.
To join us. Susan is the CMO, the Chief Officer of ICIMS, ICIMS, and they are the leading provider of innovative software-as-a-service talent acquisition solutions. So this is a company that designs the software that enables the employers to manage their entire talent acquisition lifecycle. Everything from sourcing candidates to trying to find you to recruiting you and then onboarding you once they find you, all within one single web application. This is such a useful thing for the employers because it really streamlines the process for them. One of the reasons I'm so excited for having Susan here is because she's responsible for developing new business opportunities and really kind of getting inside of the heads of the employers. in order for her to be good at her job, she really has to have a keen understanding of how employers use these systems. And she's here tonight to share those ideas with our job-seeking listeners to help them, learn how to use technology effectively. So welcome, Susan. I'm so glad that you're able to join us.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today and reach the audience that's listening tonight. So hello, everyone.
Right. Well, and again, if you've got questions for Susan throughout the call, our number is 646-716-9397. So, Susan, as I was mentioning, some of the online applications are a source of such frustration from job seekers. They often say, or they feel like a real human being's not looking at them, they're just kind of going into a great big black hole. I thought it would be really helpful if maybe you could describe how screening questions are designed and how are employers using these systems.
Absolutely. So I apologize for anyone who feels that these things are going into a black hole. Certainly that's not the intent of the software. Software might be designed with the recruiters or employers in mind, but absolutely we have a very keen awareness of how the candidate is experiencing this software as well. So at iSIMS, we've certainly taken that to heart and tried to keep that top of mind. But, of course, every employer certainly has the ability to make this as easy or as difficult as they wish. So that's one thing to keep in mind. It's not necessarily always the technology that might be putting up so-called roadblocks, but certainly the employer might need to sift through thousands of applications. So at times they might use things like screening questions to make their lives a little bit easier, as well as ensure that when they review your application or your resume that you are, in fact, a good fit for the role. So we've seen a lot of candidates talk about things like this, and we've seen employers really fall into one of two categories. There are some employers who really feel that they need as many eyeballs on their job listings as possible, and they do anything and everything to bring in that candidate flow, whether through recruitment advertising sources like job boards and search engine marketing and social media, et cetera, or they fall into the other category of saying, look, we have a ton of unqualified candidates here, and while we would love for them to find the appropriate role, this might not be the right role for them. So how do we really manage and filter that? So based on how a candidate experiences the application process, you might be able to deduce where the employer fits into one of those buckets. Ultimately, when it comes to screening questions, it's really not designed as a way to turn off candidates. I think a lot of job seekers would be surprised to find that one of the biggest topics that employers and HR departments talk about is reducing what we call candidate drop-off, which is essentially when one of you guys gets to a job application page online and then says, Matt, never mind, this doesn't look good or it's too long or what have you, and leaves. That's really what no recruiter or employer wants. So you'd be surprised how many people really do keep that in mind. Those screening questions are really designed just to make sure that the specific role to which you're applying, you have the right credentials and that you're the right fit for it. By no means does anybody expect that you're going to be perfect for every job, but we really just want to find the best fit, and then if that's not for you, lead you to other positions that might be a more appropriate match.
So when they design the questions, are they looking for keywords or I mean, what makes them say someone's qualified or not qualified? How are they making those determinations?
Great question. So sometimes those questions are designed with very specific ideals in mind. For example, let's say you work or are hiring for somebody to work in a manufacturing plant, and you know that's a very physical job, and if you can't lift 50 pounds or more, you will not be okay doing this job. It's really in the best interest of the employer, but even the candidate, to ensure that that's a good fit, you might be able to lift 30 pounds, but 50 is really going to be pushing it, and you're not a good match for that role. So there are times where it's very specific in that regard. Keywords can absolutely be important, but I wouldn't say that they are important in the screening process as much as folks might think. I would say that keywords are very important when submitting an actual resume, as a lot of software, including the iSIMS platform, really makes it extremely easy for employers to find good fits from a candidate perspective based on keywords. So if you have experience in a specific industry, using acronyms or also known as terms would be extremely beneficial so that when someone's searching the database for candidates who might fit their qualifications, they don't leave you out simply because you didn't include CRM and you just wrote out customer relationship management as an example. But really, screening questions can be anything from, you know, a 1 through 5 rate yourself, or how many years experience do you have, or do you have this degree? And for the most part, these are designed by the employer. The software providers really have nothing to do with it, but we just support it from a technology perspective. And it's really designed, frankly, just to make sure that you meet the minimum qualifications, and then from there we can sort out from a recruiting standpoint who's the best ultimate fit.
So it sounds like the screening questions are less of an issue, and maybe it's the resumes trying to get them through the right filters to use the right, as you say, that right acronyms or the right words. How do you break that code?
Sure. Well, it's not so much a trick, but certainly you just want to make sure you're putting yourself in the best position. So, for example, if you are a recent graduate and you are a finance major, let's say, it's important to note that you have experience with certain technologies, and I'm always a huge fan of including the full write-out as well as the acronym. So we use the example of CRM. If you're in the software industry, maybe you want to include not just the fact that you work in software, but software as a service, and then in parentheses, SaaS, S-A-A-S. These are small things, but if you're in the industry and you live and breathe those terms and you're recruiting for someone, you're going to look for someone who has SaaS experience and not necessarily type out software, because that could be many different things. So I think it's important to understand the jargon that the industry is known for and uses daily. But really, beyond that, it's really just making sure that you're showing that you have the right skill set. I will continue to note, I do think that comes across much more in the resume and the cover letter than maybe it does in the screening question. But one thing I will note on the screening side is that we've seen people, embellish a little bit when it comes to things like the number of years experience they have. And while I can fully appreciate why somebody wants to do that, it doesn't necessarily bode well for them in a screening process. I'll give you a for instance. There are many employers, ITEMS included, who really value green talent, candidates that are straight out of school or recent graduates, and we value what that means for our business and what it can bring to our organization. For someone who is, you know, recently graduated, they only have so many years of experience, but if they put they have 10-plus years because they feel they did a little bit of marketing or a little bit of sales while they were waitressing, they might be knocked out because we're specifically looking for someone who is relatively inexperienced or mid-tier. So I would say just be very truthful with those answers, because going below or going above doesn't necessarily help, and you really just want to make sure you're finding the right position.
And it's interesting you say that, because I think sometimes job seekers feel like they got to figure out how to game the system, and really what I hear you saying is employers are really trying to be mindful to find the right candidates. They're not trying to trick anybody. They just want to make them find the right match.
Absolutely. The one thing that a lot of job seekers might not recognize is that employers really need you. As much as it might seem that it's really hard to find a job and there are a million candidates for every open position, employers really need great talent, regardless of the position type or the level of experience, et cetera. So nobody's really trying to put up barriers to entry for you. They want you to come through. They just want you to come through for the right positions. And these screening questions or pre-qualification procedures, et cetera, are not designed to turn you off from their company by any means. It's really just to say, look, there are a lot of candidates, there are a lot of jobs. Let's do our best to match that up the most effective way and the way that is the best experience for both the candidate and the recruiting organization.
There are two questions that people often complain to me about in terms of getting they feel like it knocks them out. And the first one is the salary question, because for a lot of people, they truly feel like I would be flexible. So do you put the minimum number down and then work up, or do you put, you know, how do you answer that question?
That's a tough one. That is definitely a tough one. I've been on the employer side of it where, for whatever reason, our recruiting department put salary in as a screening question, and we knocked out a really great candidate. And I was the first one to say, hey, if we find a great candidate, that's okay. We'll figure out a way to make it financially work. On the other hand, some employers are very much bound by salaries, and they really don't have the same wiggle room as other employers. I think what's most appropriate is to put in something that's realistic. So if, for example, you're currently making $50,000 a year, you would love to make $60,000 a year, and you're asked your salary requirements. I think depending on how the question is framed, meaning if they say 50 and up or 50 to 60 or what have you, I would not put my salary requirements in as 60 unless you really won't take a position for that. Ultimately, I think every employer and candidate is willing to negotiate if it's the right match, but at the same time, the early piece to put in where your salary might fall is not necessarily for you to shoot for the stars. I personally feel you should woo them first, and then command or impress them enough to get a higher salary. That being said, I would certainly not recommend putting in your salary requirements of 30 a year if you really are expecting and want 50 plus. I think you just need to be as realistic as possible and then hope for the best from there.
Good. Well, and I'm glad to hear you say that, because that has sort of been the advice that I've been giving to people, saying you want to put in something realistic. You know you're not going to go below 50, don't put in 30 and then try and
right.
get them up. You know, put in 50. But if you're thinking 50 but you're hoping 75, put 50 in and then wait until they love you and then figure
exactly.
it out.
I completely agree. Yeah, when they say salary requirements, that's what they mean. You know, certainly everybody knows that you might have a requirement, meaning I will not move my current job if I don't earn at least this to keep up my cost of living and et cetera. But certainly it doesn't mean that everyone expects you to go to the bottom of the barrel. That being said, you don't want to go so low that the recruiter or the hiring manager feels duped later on by saying, what do you mean? They initially said that they wanted $30,000 per year, and now they're asking for $55,000. What happened here? So I think you and I are very much aligned there.
Good. Well, I'm glad I'm given the right advice. That always makes me happy.
Me too.
One other thing that I'm a little curious about, and this is one of those things that is incredibly frustrating, particularly for our mid-career folks, is, you know, say they've been a successful salesperson in a particular industry, and now they're trying to get into maybe pharmaceutical sales. So their thinking
mm-hmm.
is, salesperson, I could sell widget, I could sell dirty socks, I'm good at that, I've got the numbers, but they don't
right.
write, you know, pharmaceutical terms on their resume, so when someone's going into search, their resume is not going to come up necessarily, right? And there's not a whole lot they can do about it.
Right. I could, you know, certainly every organization is different, and some people really value the fact that a lot of individuals can walk away from one position with transferable skills that can make them dynamite in a position that they've never done before. On the other hand, some employers are very much sticklers to say you must have at least X amount of years' experience in this industry doing exactly this. Frankly, I think there are really no two ways about that, technology or otherwise aside. That's just the culture of the employer. And unfortunately, I don't think that changing something in your resume could necessarily change their view on that. You might be able to be found earlier on, but in those cases, you might be knocked out on the first phone screen or something like that, because you don't have the exact experience someone is looking for. If that's the case, however, there are certainly a lot of companies that do value transferable skills, and those are the ones to highlight. When it talks about, let's say you always go after enterprise companies or whatever it might be, if you're an enterprise sales executive, you are an enterprise sales executive regardless of whether you're selling product A or product B, and those are the things to highlight. Crushing quota, making president's club, people pay attention to that even if it's not very specific to the product to which they're selling or hoping that you sell successfully for them.
So it almost sounds like, too, you want to really, I'm hoping that their online screening questions and their search terms, if you read their ad closely, you'd be able to get some clues as to what they need to be seeing and how they might be screening things. Is that a fair assumption?
I completely agree with that. Absolutely. And I think, you know, some people are very much still about cover letters, some aren't. But if an employer requests a cover letter, I think that's 100% the opportunity for a job seeker to highlight those things. If the job description says that they're looking for someone passionate with X amount of tenacity and years of experience, et cetera, that's a time for you to certainly not replicate their words verbatim, but certainly draw those conclusions of, you said you were looking for X, this is how I match that. And these are the examples to which I can point that say how I've demonstrated it in the past. So I completely agree with you there that the job description hopefully doesn't lie. Certainly there are some employers that let those things go stale. But for the most part, what they say they're looking for is what they're looking for.
Right. I have to say, I was sort of chuckling, I looked at some of your clients and I sort of went on to see what that application process was like. And then I've looked
yep.
at some others, other companies that don't use your service. And there are two companies in particular that I'm thinking, oh, my God, do they need you? I was working with somebody, I don't know if I should name the company, but it's one of the big box stores that hire a lot of seasonal workers. And I was helping somebody who had very limited skills in terms of computer skills, trying to fill out an application form. This application form, I have never seen anything like it. To sell plants for the summer at, minimum wage, they had mm-hmm. so many hypothetical questions where, what would you do if a sales person, one of your colleagues, this and that. I mean, it was just, talk about dropping, candidate drop-off, but at that point, that particular person absolutely needed the job, and so they're going through
right.
that. So it's nice to know that a company like you is out there trying to advise employers and help them streamline this to make a kind of the bridge between the job seeker and the employer, because the folks
absolutely.
That use your stuff, I've seen those questions, and they're easier. It doesn't take you hour and a half to fill out the information.
Right. We
one of
with
the,
some clients. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. One thing I was going to mention is that we've talked with some clients that have used, say, previous technologies or what have you, and by no means is it always the fault or the success of a technology provider in making an application process quick or long. Certainly the employer has a lot to do with that, but we've had some companies migrate or move off of one software provider in favor of iSense and say, we literally saw this go down from a 65-minute application to a 7-minute application. And, that's tremendous. I think as much as recruiters would love to think that, this candidate went home and all they wanted to do was work for my company. They found my company website, they applied for me, and then they went to bed for the night. The reality is looking for a job can often be a job in itself, and a candidate might be filling out 5-plus applications in a given evening, afternoon, what have you. And if yours is the one that takes an hour and a half and your competitors take 6 minutes, that is a huge difference. That is a very big difference between a good candidate experience and a bad candidate experience. And particularly in some industries, those candidates could potentially be your clients as well. I feel like if I were looking for a job and I went to a retailer and I had to spend 90 minutes applying, I wouldn't necessarily be a huge fan of going to spend my next $5 at that store. So it's something that I think is extremely important, and I think a good portion of employers recognize and try to address, but not all of them realize the importance of it.
Could you talk to our listeners a little bit about the difference between sort of an online application and joining a talent community?
Oh, sure. An online application typically means you are actively applying for either a specific role within an organization or for general consideration within an organization. More often than not, it's the first one, meaning that you see a job listing online for a cashier, for a marketing manager, for an editor, whatever it might be, and you're saying, here is my application for this specific role, here is why I'm good for that role, here are my answers to questions about that role. Something a bit softer is in many instances referred to as a talent community. I think calls it something a little bit different when we talk about joining a social connect community. But essentially it's really just saying, I'm not sure I'm ready to apply for a specific job. And that could certainly mean that you love the company, but they don't have a job listing that's appropriate for you that day. Or you might say, look, I'm not necessarily 100% thrilled with my current role, so I'm just putting feelers out, but I'm not necessarily ready to update my resume and sit down for interviews, et cetera. So a talent community or building a talent pipeline or joining something to that effect is really just saying I have a general interest in your company, your employment brand, and maybe even specifically, let's say, technology careers. But I'm not necessarily applying for a specific job that's open today that is talking about salary, et cetera. And when you do that, when you join one of these communities, the hope is that you learn a bit about that organization over time, they might send you things like press releases or exciting new developments that are happening within the organization. Hopefully you like what you hear, and then when the time is right and a position is right for you and it's open, you and the recruiter have hopefully built a rapport such that when it's time for that application to go through, the recruiter knows that you're a good fit and you know that the company is a good cultural fit for your needs.
So when I join a talent community, I'm likely to have a conversation with a recruiter?
It really varies. I know ISIN's position did a little bit differently. Some talent communities, frankly, I think can feel like a black hole. You say, sign me up for news alerts, and you're basically getting newsletters. Within ISIN, we don't refer to it as a talent community because, quite frankly, I don't feel like there's much community aspect to this. It's not like you're networking with other candidates or anything like that. So for us, we're just saying join a talent pool, which basically means I'm interested in, say, marketing careers. I'm interested in careers in Europe or something like that. So you're basically subscribing to news, alerts, updates via email from a recruiter or otherwise about your topic of interest. It's almost like joining a sign-up from a retailer, a store, saying, let me know about sales on furniture, but I have no interest in XYZ. So for us, we frame it a little bit differently and try to explain that this is not necessarily a community, as it is a way for you to stay in touch with people in recruitment about the specific things you've voiced interest in.
On the employer side, so if I'm in a talent community, is it likely that maybe 6 months from now they'll call me because they run some kind of search and say, oh, you've got the skill set that we're looking for? Is that sort of the purpose?
Yeah, that's the hope. The hope is that, in my eyes anyway, when someone is looking for a job and lands on your career page, you need a lot of stars to align. The candidate needs to be ready to formally apply for a job. Their resume or application needs to be up to snuff and updated. You need to have an appropriate position for them at the exact day and time that they're looking for a job, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of variables that need to be in line. If you're going into the mode of a talent community or talent pipeline, it's really just kind of dating, or if you will, saying, I kind of like what I see here. Let's learn a little bit more. When the time is right, we can go to the next step and sort of commit something here. So the hope is that you have early conversations. The candidate learns more about the employer. The employer engages with the candidate, but doesn't necessarily say, as a mode of communication, how about this job? How about this job? How about this job? It's really warming everybody up to say, when the stars are aligned and the time is right, we've already met. And so it's not so much of an uncomfortable or cold conversation.
Right. I want to jump back to the screening questions just for a second, because some of them, I mean, I think you make great points. Some of it is, it's a particular skill set, you know, can you lift the 50 pounds? Do you know this technology? Those kinds of things.
Sure.
What about the ones that have sort of more essay? You know, they ask an open-ended question where they want you to type information in. Are you best, and a lot of the information that they're asking you about is really on their resume. If they looked at your resume, they would see it. Will they look at the resume if you answer in more briefly, or do you really need to put a lot of information in those kind of questions?
Actually, I think a lot of people fall too much on either end of the spectrum, and neither of them fall in the right in the middle. We either see somebody write way too little, in which case it, at least to me as a hiring manager and as I've heard from some of our clients, feel like the candidate isn't taking it seriously. And then some people write a novel, and the reality is, you know, nobody necessarily has time for that. So from a writing perspective, I would say treat it formally, treat it professionally, write it succinctly, and that's your best bet, without giving a specific rule of thumb of, you know, three lines or two paragraphs or what have you, since obviously every question is different. You need to make sure, I think the easiest mistake to make is, you know, not doing the proper punctuation, grammar, et cetera. Structure your sentences properly and professionally, but you don't necessarily need to expect that more is better.
And even if those questions don't have the little asterisk next to it saying that it's required, you would recommend that they fill it out?
In my opinion, no information that's asked is bad information to give. You know, obviously, you have a lot of things to do in a given day, but if it's a company you really want to work for, or at a minimum, a company you want to gain an interview with for interview experience, et cetera, there's no harm in filling that out. Unless you feel completely uncomfortable for whatever reason or you really don't have a good answer, in which case I would recommend, would be happy to discuss this at the time of interview or something to that effect to show that you're not scared of the question, you just feel like it's a better question to answer via dialogue.
I know a lot of people think, well, I'll just put see resume. And I said, even though it's on the resume, somehow that comes across to me as lazy, you know. You don't want to put the effort in, so you got to say something, a little bit of something. It's so funny either way. Either, oh, they're asking me all that, or then they have the questions of the just, you know, sort of you have three answers, either never, sometimes, or always, or just yes or no question, really a yes or no question. There's more information you want to provide, and you don't have an opportunity to provide. So, you know, in some regards, I think there's always a reason to complain when you're looking for a job.
I agree. So. No, I would be the first to say that a lot of these screening questions are poorly done. To the exact examples that you gave, that how can you win and be honest? And a lot of them are just not well written. There are not a lot of technologies or service providers that really focus in on how to ask the right questions. So a lot of times people just don't really know any better in how they're positioning it. But I would very much fully agree with you in saying, see, resume is not something I would recommend. If so, it shows that you don't really feel a commitment to this specific job. And frankly, a lot of people have help with their resume, and as they can and should. But I want to know how you specifically will answer this, because I'm not hiring you and your help. I'm hiring just you. So on the spot, what do you think about question 1, 2, 3?
Well, it's so interesting. I have said that never occurred to me. You're absolutely right. A lot of people have their resumes professionally done, and you're looking to see how they put together a sentence and how they would answer it. That's a great point. And it gives people an opportunity to really showcase themselves, too.
Absolutely. There are certain roles, you know, more than ever. I mean, within my organization, we've hired quite a lot of people in public relations and marketing, and writing is critical in those roles. So for a period of time, certainly wasn't a knockout question, like your pass or fail, but one of the questions was, write us a fake press release of you just got hired as our new public relations coordinator. And it was only going to be, you know, 2 paragraphs, something relatively brief, but you'd be surprised. A resume is the most eloquent thing in the world, and you see these press releases, and either someone didn't care or somebody really, really cared, or, you know, not even that they cared or didn't, but they have the talent or they don't. And if one of the key components to your role is writing press releases, and this isn't something you seem to be drawn to, it's probably not the right fit for you. And I think, again, I'll reiterate, I think candidates sometimes think that they are, you know, going at this at an uphill battle, and the reality is nobody wants to hire you into a role that you're ultimately not a fit for and you will hate within a week. So it does nobody any good to force the process, I guess is what I'm trying to articulate here.
Yeah, no, and I think you're doing a great job. We are talking tonight with our guest, Susan Vitale. She is the Chief Marketing Officer of iSIMS. They are the leading provider of innovative software, the talent acquisition solutions. Now, one of the things that you said earlier, and I've read in some of your marketing materials, which I thought were great, too, was that the questions that are being asked really do tell job seekers something about the employer. And one of the things I always harp on with people is it's got to be the right fit in both directions. So you don't want to just tell an employer what they want to hear if you're going to end up miserable when you're there. That might get – it's a little bit like dating. It's like dating and saying, oh, sure, I want to have 12 kids, get married, and you don't want to have 12 kids. You can't deliver the goods. So I love the key takeaway that pre-screening is really a two-way street, and candidates can learn a lot as well.
Absolutely.
No, go ahead.
Please, go ahead. No, I was just completely confirming.
Okay, great. I wanted to shift gears just a little bit because I read in your materials that 92% of companies are using social media to find workers. And so it's interesting to me because particularly, you know, I think the very junior people coming right out of college, they are very comfortable with using technology and being out there. But I think some of my more seasoned candidates, you know, keep thinking Facebook is a fad and I don't really want to be on LinkedIn. I don't want people to find me and things like that.
Right.
So I'm just curious where you see this how you see social media kind of impacting job hunting going forward.
Sure. I mean, I think it has a huge effect. Social has had a huge effect on virtually every industry, and recruiting and HR technology has certainly not been away from that trend. I would not say that these things are a fad at this point. I think it's just a mode of communication and a way of representing yourself outside. I do think, however, that sometimes people feel that their personal life is their personal life, their professional is a different one, and that's completely fine. But if that's the case, then make sure the public sees your profile that way. In other words, as much as recruiters will not admit it or hiring managers will not admit it, they go out there and they search your name on social media sites. So if the profile picture you have is something that is unsavory or not what you want someone to have in the back of their mind when you walk into an interview tomorrow, you should be aware of that. By no means am I saying that somebody should hide who they are necessarily, but I do think that things are just more accessible at this point, so you need to be aware of that as a job seeker and make sure that you're putting your best foot forward. I guess more specifically, however, and I guess in a less scary way, or protective measure, I think a lot of job seekers don't realize how many job opportunities are available via social media. There are tons of candidates out there that feel passionately about a brand without even necessarily thinking about them in a hiring capacity. So, for example, if I'm a huge fan of ABC Clothing Company, there are definitely chances that I've liked them on Facebook. How often, though, do those candidates realize that if they click onto that company page, more often than not, a technology provider like iSims is powering a job feed right on that company page within Facebook. So if you already like them, you can see all of the jobs that they're recruiting for. You mentioned it earlier, and I can't stress enough, you don't want to be in a job that's not the right fit for you or something that, you know, a week later you feel like you've dug yourself into a hole. If it's a company you feel passionately about, I feel like that's already a step in the right direction. So rather than just go to job boards that list, you know, tons of jobs, which is still an important vehicle, I said go first to the companies that you already like and feel strongly about and have an affinity for. They might not all be realistic, location-wise or otherwise, but it's a great place to start, and companies have embraced this hugely. It's just almost like a mini website for them to include not just news releases and sales that they're having within the retail store or what have you, but they're also expanding that out to say, hey, you guys like us, we like you too. How about hiring? How about we want to hire you into these roles? Here's a list of those jobs. So that's a tremendous way that I think candidates need to at least tap into a bit more than they maybe have, because it's a great right. opportunity to fall in love with companies that they already like.
Well, let me ask a question, because I have to admit, I'm just sort of getting into Facebook within the last 6 months or so, and I'm enjoying it. And I have both a personal page and a professional page. And the news feeds, you know, you get to see what other people are posting. And I will say yeah. sometimes I'm appalled at some of the things people post. And
yeah.
some of it's just funny and, you know, my nephews or you know, just friends of mine. And so I get that I get it. But I know them. And I wonder sometimes, are employers looking at these things as well? And do people realize how much employers can see? So
right.
If I like your company, I see what you're posting. Can you necessarily see all my posts?
Absolutely not. So that's a great question and one that we've heard quite a bit. If I work for, I'll use a company that uses our social media product, Disney. Disney Careers uses our social distribution tool, which is really the way for them to promote their job through Facebook and other media sites. If you like that page and you can see my company updates in my newsfeed, it doesn't mean I can see your updates by any means. It doesn't mean we've become friends. It doesn't mean I can see your wall posts or your photos from, you know, July 4th weekend or anything like that. That being said, that's a setting that every job seeker, every individual user on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, et cetera, needs to remind themselves to control on their own. There's not a default setting that says hide all of it. Frankly, the employers are not connecting with you because they want to see, you know, your photos from your birthday. But they do connect with you because it's their outlet to promote messages to you, just like email used to be or just like all of these other tools used to be. That being said, I would say be mindful of the fact that you might not realize if you've turned off all privacy settings and someone can see not even just photos, but your political affiliations, your religious affiliations, things like that By no means to turn somebody on or off from hiring you, but it doesn't necessarily need to be front and center either. So I would recommend hiding the things unless somebody is your actual friend or whatever category of friendship you can manage within all of those different types of sites.
I always tell people, I do a whole program on building your professional brand, and I say that's something you got to be thinking about, and particularly for some of the younger folks. I say if you don't want your grandma to see that post, you might not want to put it on there.
I would totally agree with you.
Or shouldn't see it either. So, one of the things I'm real interested in knowing about is sort of a newer trend that's coming out, the whole notion of social resumes.
Yes.
Do I have the right phrase?
I'm a huge fan of this.
Tell me more about that, because that's sort of new.
It's definitely new, I'd say, for a lot of organizations. Maybe within the past, say, 12 to 24 months, this has started springing up. We actually see a good amount of our employer companies, or clients, I should say, embrace this. And for job seekers or anyone who's listening who might not be fully aware, the concept of a social resume 100% is really designed to make it easier for a job seeker to apply for a job. I mentioned earlier that all the stars have to be aligned when you apply for a job online, including, let's say, you've updated your resume. And for the most part, unless you're really, really actively looking for a job, you need to update your resume, and that's not necessarily something that you look forward to. However, if you gain, say, a new skill or certification, or if you get promoted, chances are you do update something like Facebook or LinkedIn, et cetera. So the concept of a social resume is really that when you apply for a job online, you're able to use what we call a social resume to apply for that position, meaning that instead of creating a new login and password, you're able to essentially log in using your Facebook profile, Google Plus profile, LinkedIn profile, et cetera. And that really allows an employer to see your most recent version of your profile or resume as it relates to a social site. So it's really designed so that a candidate doesn't have to create yet another login and password for the eighth time that night and deal with another application process. And it allows the employer to see what's likely your most recently updated profile as is displayed again on some of those networks.
So how does that tie in then with the sort of the screening question? So instead of there being attached and upload your resume, it would be a click here for your social resume?
Yes, exactly. Usually, well, I can speak obviously most directly about the iSIMS experience, but oftentimes it will say, you know, interested in this job, click here to apply. And you can do that either by signing in using some of the social media sites I mentioned a moment ago, like Google+, Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera, or you can kind of do it the more traditional route, which is upload a Word document or a Google Drive document, et cetera, of your resume. Keep in mind, if you do that, it's not friending the recruiter on Facebook or anything like that. So it doesn't mean that they can all of a sudden see things they're not necessarily supposed to see. It really just pulls over information live as it relates to the job experience, meaning, of course, your name, your location, the languages you speak, your current job, your previous job, your skill sets, et cetera. So just professional details. It doesn't, it's not meant to scare people off or clean up their profile by any means on Facebook. Nothing unsavory, but it is really designed so that it's easier for the candidate so that you guys don't have to go ahead and create a new profile every time you get to a new job site.
So I have to say, people like me have got to be one step ahead of this curve and really learn and look at those and sort of how they're laid out. And I mean, as somebody who does resumes all the time, you're always looking at formatting and, you know, the use of bolds and underlines and things like that to make it visually attractive. You have to figure those things a social resume as well.
Well, the social resume is typically formatted the way that Facebook, LinkedIn, et cetera, choose to. A traditional resume is still formatted the same pretty way that it was within the iSIMS application, although I know other applications, they just do a plain text, which makes it not pretty. And that, frankly, I think is a shame. A candidate or whoever they partner with spend so much time making it look professional and fancy that you want to make sure that's the first impression the recruiter or the hiring manager sees as well. So iSIMS definitely does that, but I think we're a little bit unique in that regard.
Right. We actually have a caller on the line. So if you hang on just a second, let me get our caller.
Hi.
Fancy. Hi, caller, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
I don't. Good. How are you? What's your name?
Okay. My name is Mikhail Ratner. I am calling from New York. I'm a recent job seeker. Hi, Kathleen. Actually, I'm going to probably be seeing you tomorrow. But I have a very quick question regarding LinkedIn. I have a very active LinkedIn profile. I have many, many LinkedIn connections. And you guys were talking about the social resume aspect. And in my job search, I have come across these kind of websites from employers. My question is, do employers, when you log in through LinkedIn, do employers have access to all of the information in LinkedIn or just part of it? I may not want an employer to see all of my LinkedIn account because I want to be able to tailor my application to a particular job, and my LinkedIn account and the professional experiences that I list there are fairly detailed and are more generic. And as a follow-up question, maybe is should I change my LinkedIn profile in order for me not to have run the risk of an employee seeing this and keep it very, very simple and bare bones? I hope I made myself clear.
I think that's a great question because if you have at this point you can have a couple of different versions of your resume if you're looking for a legal job or if you're looking for a non-legal job or if you're looking to go to a firm versus to go in-house. But if you've only got one LinkedIn profile, that's a great question. What's your best recommendation, Susan, to manage that? Thank you for the question, Misha.
Of course. Yes, I think it's an excellent question. I would recommend if you're applying for similar roles over and over and, for instance, your summary on LinkedIn, your previous experience, et cetera, will not change from job to job to which you're applying, use the sign in with LinkedIn or sign in with Facebook or whichever social media platform you prefer. If it is going to be radically different or at least different enough that you would feel that it warrants a change to those areas, I would say use a traditional resume. For the most part, employers don't necessarily prefer or not prefer a candidate who uses social or doesn't use social to apply unless that position is, say, social media coordinator for the company. If I'm applying for social media coordinator and I'm not using a social media profile to apply, I think that is a little bit strange. But for the most part, you won't be at a disadvantage by applying for a traditional resume. And I definitely agree that modifying your resume to best suit the position to which you're applying is absolutely the right way to go, and you don't necessarily have the ability to do that on LinkedIn. LinkedIn requires a one-size-fits-all profile. So the first point around, is it all visible to employers? No. They won't necessarily see, for example, skills and expertise, but the group to which you apply or are a member of. They won't see things like that, but they will see your summary. They'll see the previous employers, the keywords you use within the skills section.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your information. That's very helpful.
One thing I would recommend is that even if you don't use LinkedIn or Facebook or what have you to apply for a job as far as the profile you use, I would recommend that you absolutely reach out to a hiring manager, connect with them or what have you, and really just say, hey, I saw XYZ position. You're the director of XYZ department. Really love what your company is doing. I would love to connect with the recruiter. I've already submitted my application, as requested by your website or however it's played. Just wanted to connect with you. I'm impressed with what you're doing. Something to that effect that the recruiter is sometimes the gatekeeper, and to go straight to the hiring manager is always a good thing.
And it's so interesting you say that because a lot of times the recruiters from the different companies have the open emails that you can give them an email. You can send them an email without having to friend them or like them. They want they're open to receiving those things.
Yeah.
And people are afraid to do that. But I always say to folks, too, you've got to do more than just say, hi, I'd like to link to you. You've got to make it personal. And, as you just said, I've applied for a job or I'm interested in your company, something that – I can't tell you how many people I get links from and say, hi, I'd like to link to you. And I think, who are you? Why? And most people I would be happy to, but, to me, LinkedIn needs to be people that I'm trying to develop a relationship with. It's not just sort of how many 500 plus you have, it's really,
right.
I think quality relationships is sort of key.
I think it's one of those things that a lot of times people don't know what to say to the recruiter or the hiring manager via an email or a message or what have you, that to me the takeaway would be, if you applied for a job, 5 o'clock tonight, and you speak to your best friend, your mom, your husband, your wife, whatever, later on, and you say, oh, my God, I'm so excited about this job. I think it's perfect because that's the kind of thing you can articulate to a recruiter or a hiring manager via email or an in-mail or what have you. So excited to see this. I think I'm perfect for it because that's all. You just need to stand out and show why you're a match for that particular role or show your passion or your commitment to the company. That's really all it takes. It doesn't need to be something crazy. And if you think of it through the lens of how would you show that you're excited about it to one of your close friends or family members or spouse, et cetera, then that's something a little bit easier, I think, for somebody to drum up in a few sentences.
It's so interesting, too, because I think sort of all of this conversation reinforces the point to folks, this is one aspect of the job hunt. So, yes, you apply online, but then you do other things to support that, whether it's reaching out to the recruiter or using your own network to see who do you know inside the company or someone who can introduce you to somebody that you can then send an email or pick up the phone and call and say, hey, I applied for a job, would love to talk to you to learn more about the company, who would be the right person to follow up with, and really kind of use everything you've got, come at them from a couple of different directions.
1,000%. There are so many technologies that allow you to see who already works at a company that you're interested in working for that people don't take advantage of. And frankly, you might even reach out to your old friend from high school and say, hey, I just applied here. I'm so excited. Is this a good company? And they might say, no, it's horrible. And then you'll save some time.
Right. Oh, Susan, you're very popular. We've got another caller on the line. Hang on a second. Oops. Hello, caller. You're on the line.
Hi, Kathy. It's Juliana.
Hi, Juliana. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm so glad you called. What's your question for our guest?
I was listening on the computer, and you guys were just talking about, going the extra mile and, reaching out to recruiters or hiring managers to express, your passion and your excitement about the jobs you just applied for. But I found that many times I can't find a person to connect with or to reach out to or to email and say, hey, I just applied for this job and I'm perfect for it because X, Y, and Z, and I'm really excited to, have the opportunity to maybe come work for your company. So what would you recommend to do in that situation?
When you've looked on LinkedIn and there's no person there that you can connect to?
Yes, exactly.
The only other thing that I would offer is, I don't know if you were able to listen to the show we had from the woman in the library, but if you belong to your library, there are so many databases out there that can get you a name of a key person within the company. Sometimes it's the HR director, sometimes it's the chief managing officer or whoever it might be. That's another way that you might be able to find a live person. The only other idea that I often give people is go back to your school and get an alumni directory and see if there's an alumni connection that might be there. Susan, are there other social media contact places other than LinkedIn and Facebook that you can think of that might help her find a live person in a company?
Oh, certainly. I think that for the most part, job descriptions don't know who the specific hiring manager is, but you almost always know what department it's for. Juliana, what kind of job are you looking for, job function or department?
I was looking mostly for publishing houses, mostly based in New York.
Okay, great. So depending on if you're going to the ad sales route or the editorial route or what have you, let's say it's going to be in ad sales. You can almost always find somebody in that department in a variety of ways. Let's say on LinkedIn, if somebody's looking for a position for ad sales manager, Northeast region, you can almost always find, not necessarily the noted or named hiring manager, but find somebody who is the Northeast regional sales director. Might not be the direct hiring manager, but you can reach out and say, I don't know if you're the direct hiring manager. But 9 times out of 10, that person will forward it to the person who's applying for the job and really respect your chutzpah for reaching out and just saying,
I'm sure you know who's hiring for this, you know, obviously in a tactful way. I'm really excited about the position. Additionally, there are a lot of ways, even on Twitter and Quora and some of the other sites, to find people by job title. So you might know if you're looking for a, you know, associate publisher position, whoever the publisher or senior publisher, et cetera. Just by doing that, even if you come up with five or someone who's in at least that function, I guarantee they know who the hiring manager is for it, and they will get it to the appropriate person. I always say you're better off sending it to the wrong person than not sending it at all, because chances are they'll route it to the person you're looking for. But I completely agree with Kathleen that, you know, ZoomInfo and Jigsaw and some of these other sites can certainly help you navigate that as well. But, you know, it's a little easier to not have to go through all of the hoops and just say, this is someone probably in that department that can hopefully help me out. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
I would think groups too, right? LinkedIn groups for publishers and
sure.
Writers, those kinds of communities where if you join a community, you may then be able to find a connect that way.
Absolutely.
Great. It's interesting too, because the one other thing that I'm hearing is, so we've got some people using sort of the paper resumes. Some people still use paper. At law firms, they tend to still look at the paper resumes. And we've got electronic resumes. We've got social media resumes. I hear coming down the pike there may be video resumes, which I'm going to ask you about in a moment. But right now, you don't necessarily know which technology employers are using. So as the job seeker, you kind of want to be prepared with all of them, right?
Yeah, I think there's no harm in being overly prepared. But at the same time, you do what's comfortable for you. As I mentioned earlier, you're not necessarily shunned for not having a social resume or a video resume or something like that. That being said, if somebody at the employer site, like a recruiter, says, hey, we're interested in you, please fill this out. It's a video cover letter or it's a social profile. If you're truly interested, then fill it out. Not filling it out doesn't necessarily show that you're interested.
What do you see the trend coming down the pike with the video resumes? Where are we still
there are already a couple of video interview management platforms on the market. I can speak for iTunes, obviously, Ms. Directly. We're bringing out a video cover letter in just a couple months, which is almost like a 60-second soundbite of tell me why you're good to work for this company. Why do you love us? Why should we love you? And that will be out December, January.
You do know that I'm immediately flashing back to Legally Blonde with Elle sitting in the pool swimming, telling why she should be allowed to go to Harvard.
Exactly. That's exactly what we were going for.
So when you do these things for employers, do you then have offer courses on the flip side on how job seekers could use that?
Yeah, so sometimes. It depends on the type of functionality. So there are certain times, like with video resume or video cover letter, as we're calling it, that we're building by default tips for candidates and recruiters on how best to utilize the functionality.
Well, Susan, you have just been a font of information. This has been so exciting, and I think you've shared some really good insights with my listeners, and we've only got a couple minutes left, so I just want to give you an opportunity to share sort of your best piece of advice in terms of using technology. You know, what if you had to sum it all up for our listeners, what advice would you give them?
Well, I think on the job seeker side, it's be honest with yourself of what job is a good fit for you, what's a stretch goal versus what's completely unrealistic. Don't waste your own time. Don't waste other people's time. But if you are a good fit, do everything you can to make it shine like you are a good fit. Your resume should articulate it and match it as best as possible to the job description or job requirements. You should reach out via social or otherwise to the people involved in the process and express your genuine interest. And you should really try and be as sincere as possible in answering things like screen questions to ensure that you're not setting yourself or the employer up for disappointment shortly thereafter.
Fabulous. Susan, thank you so much for your time and your insights for folks. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. We will certainly send you the link as well that you can I don't know if you want to tell people how to get in touch with you. I know your target audience is really employers. I'm not sure that you want the job seekers, but why don't you give them the name of your company in case we've got any employers listening, because it's a very good system.
Absolutely, and we certainly do white papers and things like that for job seekers as well. It's ICIMS, I-C-I-M-S, and the website is www.icims.com, I-C-I-M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you so much for having me tonight. Hope it was valuable for everybody.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. So I just want to remind our listeners, don't forget to listen to some of the upcoming shows that we have on Blog Talk Radio, the Life Coach Radio Network. Tomorrow we have Me Optimized with our style coach, Tiffany Dixon. That's at 8 o'clock. And then on Friday we've got Life Coach Chat, and that is at noon. And next Wednesday, you know, my show's on every other Wednesday, and in the alternate Wednesdays is Purposeful Conversations. And next Wednesday is Purposeful Conversations, A Roadmap to Success. So certainly that's going to be very helpful to you in your job search and as you go forward. Also wanted to remind you to like us on Facebook. We are at KB Career Planners, and so hope that you'll all like us there. And I did want to do one little commercial for a program that I've got coming up that people can register for called Moving Forward, How to Get Unstuck. It's a three-hour seminar from 9:30 to 12 on Thursday, August 1st. And if it's designed for people that, you know, if you've ever wondered why other people achieve their dreams while you remain stuck, if you join us for this seminar, we will teach you how to identify any of the internal and external blocks that are interfering with your success and help you design effective strategies to defeat those blocks and to move forward. So you can find out about more information about that on Facebook, again, at KB Career Planners, or on my website, careerplanners.net. And, of course, don't forget to go out and buy a copy of Get a Job, 10 Steps to Career Success, also available on my website, or you can get it at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. So thank you again, Susan. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers, for calling in. This has been Kathleen Brady with Get a Job with Kathleen Brady, and we are signing off. So good night, everyone. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.